D-Mace, Fingen, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingen here with you. And as he does every Monday at 1 o'clock, joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, ESPN, NFL Nation reporter, Titans reporter, that is, Teron Davenport. Teron, I hope you had a restful bye week. How are you?
Oh, yeah. Restful bye week. Good to go.
Excellent. So as we left the Titans, they won in Miami. They did so without Jeffrey Simmons because of an elbow injury. Will Levis injures his shoulder. Mason Rudolph comes in, helps the Titans win their first game of the season. Should we expect Will Levis and Jeffrey Simmons to be full go, close to full go, as the Titans start practice this week?
Well, yeah, Brian Callahan said Will Levis should be good to go, so you take that for what it is. Jeffrey Simmons, when he was asked about that, he just said that that's kind of, you know, a day-to-day thing, and they'll see. And it's one of those things where it will be some pain tolerance, and it's just going to be like how well Simmons is able to protect himself. That's the main thing. So I would say Simmons is kind of touch and go. We'll see, but it's very likely that Levis is back.
So with that in mind, Teron, Will Levis has been under a lot of scrutiny over the past 4 weeks because of his play to start the season. Knowing Levis as you do, what do you think this bye week can do for him to take that breather? And how do you think he'll respond now that he should, as you say, get back in the lineup on Sunday against the Colts?
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for self-reflection, and there's some things that he obviously has to think about and want to fix and rewire, as he phrased it. So we'll see what happens there. I think he's going to bounce back. Well, you know what? I'm not going to say that. I believe he's going to, but it remains to be seen, to be honest with you. You can't really make any definitive judgments based off of what we've seen up to this point, where there's a variety of decisions that have repeated themselves and in different occasions, and it's not been good. So we'll see. That's the way I would approach it.
Now, TD, with the play of Devondre Sweat last week, and he played outstanding. The big fella was moving around. He looked like that Outland Trophy winner out of Texas. Does this take the pressure off of the Titans' defense to try to rush Jeffrey Simmons back? Because, you know, with Jeffrey Simmons, obviously this is a much better defensive front. But at least you know you have Sebastian Day there, and then you have the big fella Sweat now starting to come into his own. Does that give the Titans a little breather to say, hey, listen, if Simmons isn't 100%, let's hold him out another week?
Yeah, I think this is a week that they could do that if they want. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who's going to be playing quarterback for the Colts, but either way, you could afford to kind of work around not having Simmons out there. They definitely would like to have him out there, but you're right. Given the play of Devondre Sweat, it does give you that luxury. And quietly, Sebastian Joseph Day has had a really good season, and he's just been a steady veteran that has come in and made some plays. He got a couple sacks, and he's doing his thing as well. So they could do that, and I think, you know, to kind of make up for that, they'll just have to make sure that they attack that interior gap, you know, with their linebackers, Ernest Jones the fourth and Kenneth Murray.
Now, has there been talk this off week? And I know the guys have been out of there, but the coaches have still been there. Talk about how to get this offense clicking, how to get it to be consistent, getting this offense on the roll, because we haven't quite seen this offense really get into a rhythm the way that we thought they would once they added all these pieces.
Yeah, I think the main thing has just been finding that balance on offense. Brian Callahan spoke about it today. They have to be able to run the football, but they want to throw it too, and being able to morph into whatever it is that they have to do at that moment and do that well. I think that's the main thing. So a balanced attack, that's their goal.
Talking to Teron Davenport, setting up the Titans and the Colts, a big one. TD, just a quick vibe check from you, especially with the Mets playing the Phillies and you know about that territory that you're from, like that area between New York and Philadelphia, that Jersey Turnpike, where there's a lot of mix between those two fans. That is going to be unbelievable, the atmosphere tomorrow in New York.
Yeah, I mean, I lived in both cities, you know, originally in New York, and that's where I, you know, cut my teeth as a sports fan, right, you know, with the Mets, and that's why I still, even after living in Philadelphia and the surrounding area for so long, that's why I remained a Mets fan, you know, and it's definitely a rivalry. This is the first time the two teams have played each other in the postseason because of the different rules and things like that have come into play, so it's cool. I really thought they should have stole one yesterday, but you know, it came up short. Diaz, you know, allowed the runs, and here we are, you know. So it's unfortunate, but I tell you, that Mark Vientos continues to do his thing, man. I really like him.
It was a tough one yesterday, but if you told me before that they'd get the split in Philly, I think I would have taken it. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. TD, Tavondre Sweat, D-Mace asked you about him. One of the questions I put out there for our show was, does he have a chance to finish in the top 10 in Defensive Rookie of the Year? And one of the reasons I said it was we were watching what he was doing every day in practice, but I didn't think nationally a lot of people had him on the radar at all. Do you think he's starting to get the attention around the league that he probably deserves based on how he's played so far?
I think somewhat. The problem is what he does, it doesn't show up as much as the sacks do, and that's the main thing. You know, you look at a defensive lineman, you know, the stat chasers, they always say, hey, well, how many sacks does he have? So that, I think, is going to hurt him. But, I mean, if you sit there and you watch the game and you look at that end zone copy and you see him reestablishing the line of scrimmage in the offense's backfield, you could really appreciate what he's doing out there.
What do you think they did as they went back to the drawing board? Because I think you asked some questions along these lines after they beat Miami, and you kind of were looking ahead when you do that self-evaluation during any bye week. But the role definition at wide receiver, how do you think they try to go through that process and sort it out? Because I think that's an important question. It's having everybody flourish in the role that's set out for them, because they've got some difficult pieces to fit together.
Yeah, there are some difficult pieces. I think really the big thing is getting them the football, right? And getting the time to get them the football. That's another big thing. So, yeah, there's different roles and things that these guys are playing. Treylon Burks, he continues to be a deep threat that doesn't necessarily get the deep completions. So that's something they're going to have to get together and figure out, because that will open things up underneath more. But it's just there's no consistency whatsoever to the offense, and that's the big problem.
Teron, looking at this division, the AFC South, now it seems like Houston is far and away the best team, but it seems they lost their number one option last night, and Nico Collins, don't know how long he's going to be out with a hamstring. You see Indianapolis, they lost their starting quarterback, but I think they may be a tad bit better with Joe Flacco at quarterback because he wants to push the ball down the field. Then you look at the Titans in Jacksonville. Realistically, looking at this division outside of Houston, do the Titans, if they manage to get things together, do the Titans have a realistic chance to push for that second spot? Or even if Houston have any more injuries, even sort of push the Houston Texans? I'm not saying they're going to overtake them, but push them, because it just seems like this division is getting more depleted as we move on week after week. You look at Jacksonville, they've lost guys. They even talk about trading ETN. So a lot of teams are not in the position that they thought they would be in at this point of the season.
Yeah, well, one of those teams is the Titans. Yeah. So that has to be considered. But if they could get things together, and that's a big if, I would imagine they could push them. But again, just based off of what we've seen, I can't say definitively that this is a team that's going to compete, because we've just seen some bad football, right? The Green Bay game was bad. The Chicago game, stretches of it were bad. The Jets game, the same thing. The Dolphins game, was so-so, but we know that's not really a good Dolphins team. So I would say they're right there behind the Texans. They're right there with the Colts and Jaguars, and it's just kind of like a cluster of teams just vying for a position to maybe have a late strike against the Texans. Fortunately, the Titans, they still have two games against Houston, you know, one here and then one in Houston. And then you also look at the fact that this is going to be their first divisional game, so they're opening up that part of the schedule.
Teron, last one before we let you go. What are some of your initial thoughts on the Colts? And one of the stranger streaks in the NFL, the Colts losing in Jacksonville 37-34. They have not won a road game against the Jaguars since, I believe, 2014. Now, one of those games was a game in London where the Jags were considered the home team, but the Colts have not had any success on the road in Jacksonville. No Jonathan Taylor, Joe Flacco, Alec Pierce connected for some deep shots late in the game to make the game interesting. If Joe Flacco were to start for the Colts on Sunday, what can we expect from the Colts offense, and what challenges does it pose for the Titans defense?
Yeah, he's going to throw the ball down the field. He's going to look to spread it around, and I think you could expect things to be more on schedule. So it makes it's a gift and a curse, so to speak, in that you know how the offense is going to flow. You don't have to worry about, although he did have a really good scramble yesterday, but for the most part, you don't have to worry about that freelancing, that extending plays and having a plaster for 6 seconds. You don't have to worry about that, but at the same time, you got to worry about things going the way the offense is planning to go. So it's a tough assignment either way, and you know Jonathan Taylor, if healthy, is a threat running the football, so you do have that. And I think the main thing is they got to be physical with A.D. Mitchell. He seemed to struggle a bit with that, the Cambridge product. And so if they be physical with him, I think that will help them come along.
Teron Davenport, ESPN, NFL Nation, Titans reporter, joining us as he does every Monday at 1 o'clock. Teron, welcome back from the bye, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, appreciate it. Take care.
Teron Davenport.
LGM.
I just have to say, Derek, have you ever seen Joe Flacco run like that?
Oh, yeah.
That was a heck of
Absolutely.
A run. I saw it. I was like, wow, look at this. The announcers for the game, too.
Derek's
like,
old
wow.
teammate, Joe Flacco.
Hey, Joe caught a touchdown pass, and he caught it and ran majority of the way. So that was his rookie season, though, when he was a little lad, you know, about the size of a grasshopper. He had a little speed to him, but he did march down the field running the football after he caught a pass. I think it was about 40, 50 yards, and he showed a little speed. And he shows some speed this weekend, so there you go.
So according to Next Gen Stats, Flacco reached a top speed of 18.76 miles per hour on his 21-yard scramble, his fastest speed as a ball carrier in the Next Gen Stats era since 2016. So maybe he hit a higher speed on the play that you're referencing, but since at least 2016, that was the fastest we've seen Joe Flacco run in almost 10 years.
That might be the fastest you see him run, period.
That was awesome. The first thing the announcer said was, let's check the stats to see if that's his longest run ever.
You know what? The weird part about this, because reading that article that you sent, Adam, about why teams wouldn't sign Joe Flacco, because it was almost that fear of him, you know, overshadowing the starting quarterback. Which is what's happening. But I think Indianapolis is in a position. They're like, listen, Richardson's our quarterback no matter what Joe does. And I'm with them on that because Joe only has so many years left in his league. I wonder if the Titans thought that as well because when free agency started, if you were comparing the two, you would have thought, I'm taking Flacco over Mason Rudolph. Yeah, that's just a logical way of thinking. You're talking about a Super Bowl winning
comeback
quarterback.
Player of the year.
Yeah, comeback player of the year.
Off the couch, leading the Browns
Why
to the playoffs,
wouldn't
right?
you go after a quarterback like that?
Which what makes did they me pay Flacco as opposed to what the Titans paid Rudolph? That should be factored in.
I guess, but I'm sure he's not getting, you know,
because
10,
the Titans
12,
had the budget
million
to go
dollars.
After whatever they wanted.
Yeah,
really.
That's what
they
I'm
had
saying.
A lot of money.
So did you not bring him in because you were scared that if he got in there, he would, you know, sort of outshine your starting quarterback?
My very quick research says the Colts signed Joe Flacco to a one-year deal up to $8.7 million.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Rudolph, like, I think, was in the five range, between five and six, I believe.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, why didn't you go after Joe Flacco, who had put together a good body of work last year, as opposed to going for Mason? Listen, Mason's okay, but if I want to see how my offense is going to run, wouldn't I go get Joe Flacco that used to pushing the ball down the field? But you compromise your team for your quarterback. That's the stuff that I'm talking. And we talked about that, and I just got on a tangent right here. But I hate that. It's like, so you're compromising the other 51 players for one guy? Because you said he's my quarterback. He's starting. When he's ready, he's back in the starting lineup. Okay, what if he continues to play poorly? Then what? You're going to eventually go to Mason Rudolph. Well, you could have had Joe Flacco here.
It'd be interesting if they had Flacco, because he's got more credentials, resume, skins on the wall than Mason Rudolph, who is, and I think that's part by design. I think that's what you're getting at, right? Let's not, and you said this years ago when they had Matt Hasselbeck and they let him go because there was kind of a sense of, well, Matt Hasselbeck's still pretty good. We need Jake Locker to jump in there. We don't want people to say, well, Matt Hasselbeck's still better.
And I think they did it again.
They brought in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who made the rounds as a backup to, I don't know, 12, 15, 20 teams before it's all over. But there's a different feeling. It's not as strong. If you had Flacco as your backup and he had done what he was doing, I think there would be a much stronger push. Let's go with Flacco. Then Mason Rudolph, who, as well as he was, looked steady, it was still kind of, well, it's still Mason Rudolph, right? He hasn't done in the league anything close to what Flacco's done.
There was an interesting tidbit, by the way, in a column from Diana Russini of The Athletic as it relates to Mason Rudolph, which I do want to touch on next, as well as get back to our review of our Titans questions, Willie's Titans questions from before the season. We did our first three on Friday. We'll do three more next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Thanks to Teron Davenport for joining us in the previous segment, talking Titans. Couple of Titans questions we need to get to here before the season. Willie had 10 questions for us about the Titans, just as I have had questions about the Predators these past couple of days. And no better time than now to revisit our predictions for those Titans questions. So last week we did 1 through 3. I think today we're going to do 4 through 6. So Willie, let's revisit our next three Titans preseason questions.
All right. Now that they've played about a quarter of the season, 17 games really messes up the math on that. It used to be so nice. 16 games, 4, 4, 4, 4. But, we went through the first three on Friday, Tony Pollard or Tajay Spears, who would be more productive? Clearly it's Pollard so far. 14 takeaways last year for the Titans defense. The question is, with the new D, would they create over or under 20.5? They are not on the pace right now. They have only gotten 2 takeaways through the first 4 games, although the defense has done a lot of nice things. And how many points will the Titans offense average per game, or the Titans period? I guess defensive touchdowns factor in, but they're at 19.8 thanks to the 31-point outburst that they had against the Dolphins. All right, question 4, will Tavondre Sweat finish in the top 10 in NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year? Top 10, just ask Teron that question. I think he gave a very interesting answer in that he plays a position that is not very sexy when it comes to stats. It's not like, hey, let's look at the running backs and let's look at the quarterbacks. On offense, it's a lot easier to figure this out. D-Mace, in fact, all three of us said yes, he would finish in the top 10. I would have to say he's played well enough to warrant consideration for top 5. Would you guys agree with that? Even though it's just a question of whether people who vote on this are noticing.
Right. He does not have the eye-popping stats. He has yet to record a sack. He has 5 quarterback pressures in 4 games. He has played more than 70% of the snaps, which is a solid number. I think we saw on Monday, last Monday, how impactful he could be. But because it's hard to quantify, or it's not necessarily hard to quantify, but like his numbers are not jumping off the page. And when you're making and when you're voting on these awards, people who aren't watching the Titans regularly are not going to know of that impact unless they say, well, he has, let's just say, he finished the season with 4 sacks. Probably didn't do very well.
Yeah.
You know,
and I don't know who votes on the Rookie of the Year.
I don't either.
But, like, I would think coaches, if you consulted coaches of offenses, they're probably take a lot more note than say, people who are just looking at stats like sacks.
Yeah, I mean, the coaches would be able to, again, yeah, like you said, I don't know who actually does the voting. Is it coaches? Is it defensive coordinators? Is it just all media?
I think for the award, I think it's media, if I had to guess.
It's the Associated Press Defensive Rookie of the Year, which means it is it's voted
it's
on by reporters.
All media. So, I mean.
So do you trust those people to go ask the coaches? I don't know. Some will, some won't, probably.
They're going to have to ask, you know, the coaches, because they can't just go based upon, you know, because you don't know what they're asking. That, say, for instance, T'Vondre Sweat, the numbers may not look sexy, but you don't know what they're asking him to do within the framework of your defense. And you know that, you know, defensive tackles normally are not, you know, sack generators. They're not guys that are going to get, you know, 10, 12, 14 sacks. Now, you have your outliers, Arnold, you know, and he's no longer, he's retired. You know, whether it's Lawrence, guys like that, they're going to get, you know, right around that number. But his impact, like I said before, his impact could be something more than just the numbers. It could be, you know, the pressures and, you know, the tackles for loss. And how does that defensive front look against the run when he's in the game and when he's out of the game? I think that's so you got to give nuances when you're talking about T'Vondre Sweat.
Yes.
You can't just give, oh, he didn't have this many sacks. Well, you got to give the nuances. What else is going on around him that makes him an impact player?
If people were watching Monday night,
yeah,
having a performance like that where probably a lot of people are watching that wouldn't otherwise be watching the Titans because it was one of only two games on at the time. I'm hoping that kind of thing might have put him on the radar, and maybe he can build on that.
Because you look at Wiggins, he's hurt from Baltimore, the starting corner. I think he's back in the but he's been good this season. The linebacker for the Rams, was it the Rams out of UCLA? How do you pronounce his name? I forget it. The two out of with the Colts. I'm sorry, with the Colts.
Yeah, that's a guy people were saying before the year. Oh, watch this guy. This guy
exactly.
Gonna be good.
And this is a guy that, you know, he had health issues in college. That's why some people took him off their board. But he seems to be playing pretty well. So those are the sexy sort of
because he'll get sacks.
Exactly, because he'll get sacks. T'Vondre Sweat is not in that position where he's gonna garner a lot of sacks.
All right, question five. This is number 2 of 3 that we'll get to today. Will DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley combine for over or under 2,200 receiving yards? Let's take a check after 4 games. If you took the over, D-Mace.
Yep.
Which I didn't take the over.
Yep.
Adam and I took the under. I probably, in retrospect, should have made this 2,000 even, 1,000 for each. I went a little higher on the over-under than I probably should have. But right now, they are pacing for around half. Hopkins has 10 catches for 121 yards, and Ridley has only 9 catches for 141 yards. So they've got 262 after 4 games. So if you multiply that by 4, that's not going to get it done.
They're on, I mean, both of them are on pace for what, about 700-800 yards?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. And that would be.
And it's shaping up to be an offense that probably is probably best off not firing it all around the yard.
But that, it would be a monumental disappointment if those guys end up under 900 yards, especially Calvin Ridley. It would be a huge disappointment. I know it'd be a disappointment for him, but it'd be a huge disappointment because, to me, when you add guys like that to your roster, and you're relying on your quarterback, and you have, you know, this trust in your quarterback that not many people have, but you as the head coach, you got to try to get something. And right now, they're just not getting anything out of him consistently that's going to help fuel and generate this offense. Because even Joe Burrow, his first year, they were horrible. But he got injured, but he showed promise. The second year he came back and he showed a lot of promise. But you add playmakers to him and he just goes out and play the game the way he knows how. Well, you add playmakers to Will Levis's plate and things are still not going well for this team from an offensive standpoint.
I'm feeling pretty good about my prediction. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm not. I'm like, man, this is just
Another factor is DeAndre Hopkins in the coming weeks, I do think will continue to be in the conversation of trade. And we'll see how they play in the next couple of weeks, which will take them in one direction or another.
Well, if they don't win this game, yeah, you need to be looking for a trade partner for DeAndre Hopkins for him. And he should be quietly.
Yeah, he might be fanning the flames.
Quietly like, hey, listen, I don't have too many years left here. So let's work something out. You did it for Byard last year. Can you do the same for me?
And this affects our final question that we're hitting today. Question six, Treylon Burks, over or under 12.5, by my definition, dynamic plays, which Adam has renamed Donick dynamic plays. I define them a touchdown of any kind or a 20 or more yard catch or run. So plays that hopefully he can do to inject a little life into the offense.
Can I tell you how many he has?
You don't have to.
It won't take very long.
It's just that noise. That's the noise. How many dice?
Is that the code for zilch in your own language?
Yeah. Yes.
Zero. Zep.
Zero.
Zero.
Not a.
Zero.
24 total receiving yards.
Damn.
For Treylon Burks through four games. Three catches, 24 yards.
The play that comes to mind for me, what it was supposed to be, was that catch that we analyzed backwards and forwards against the Jets, or the catch that wasn't, that ended up being intercepted where, you know, the throw's not quite right. He had a chance maybe to come down with it. The ball ends up getting intercepted. So far through four games, he's got a long way to go. If suddenly D-Hop was traded, he might be on the field more, therefore get targeted more. But right now, this is not looking good. And it has you kind of going down a pathway of this looks like a sunk first-round pick,
but they
adding him to the club.
Yeah, they haven't had many explosive plays outside the run game. I mean, a touchdown to Calvin Ridley. They had another long pass to Calvin Ridley.
Not really impactful.
They haven't had anything that has
like
been.
Pollard's had a couple of nice runs. He had a 41-yarder, I think, against the Dolphins. They've had a few, but not the ones that are like that electrifying.
Like Derrick Henry's run to seal the game for the Ravens yesterday?
Pretty much so.
You can picture several Derrick Henry's runs, I think, in the first five
weeks. Last 3 weeks, you can figure like eight of them.
Jeez.
He wasn't doing much for the Ravens in that game up until that point.
No.
They contained
him until.
Yes,
until
they
could.
Yeah.
Right. It was only a matter of time, but I think I'm pretty confident that Treylon Burks is not going to
hit that. So my idea was like 12.5. That's not even one per week. That's one here, one there, a couple here, and he hasn't had any. So to get to 12.5 didn't seem like a huge mountain to climb, but it just doesn't look like it just doesn't look good.
Well, he's not catching the ball. The quarterback's not consistent.
I went over and D-Mace went over. Adam went under, just for the record. D-Mace and I need a surge from Treylon. Come on, Treylon.
Come on. Well, I'm not done with it.
Yeah,
if he does it, great. If he doesn't, then, it is what it is.
That's Adam patting himself on the back.
That sound you hear is me patting myself on the back for that. I mean, it wasn't a hard choice for me. I wasn't very confident in what Treylon Burks could accomplish this season. So we will wrap up the questions tomorrow. The Titans are back on the field. They face the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. Could it be Joe Flacco? Could it be Anthony Richardson? We will find out as the week progresses, but we will wrap up our review of Willie's preseason Titans questions tomorrow. 615-737-1025. I saw a very interesting note from a notable NFL insider over the weekend as it relates to the Tennessee Titans. We'll touch on that next, as well as revisit Vanderbilt's epic 40-35 win against Alabama on Saturday. Just an awesome, awesome scene. Congratulations to Vanderbilt. We'll touch on that again before we wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, the game. D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Stillman and Company with Jared Stillman coming up next. Jared hopped on the air on Saturday night.
Yes, he did.
After Vanderbilt beat Alabama and did a two-hour special edition of Stillman and Company to celebrate Vanderbilt's win against Alabama. And Vanderbilt is back in action this weekend against Kentucky. We will talk to Clark Lee tomorrow at 1:30. Very excited to talk to Clark Lee after his team's win against Alabama. You could tell how emotional he was and how big of a win that was for him personally, considering how much blood, sweat, and tears he has poured into the Vanderbilt football program over his career. So, speaking of quarterbacks, we were just talking about Will Levis, Mason Rudolph with Teron Davenport. Diana Russini of The Athletic has a column that comes out every Sunday morning before kickoff. And buried way at the bottom of this column, there is a note that says, "No quarterback controversy in Tennessee yet." And this is what Diana Russini writes. "The Titans have a bye week this weekend," or a bye this weekend, "and maybe a little time off will be good for them. It's been a rough start. Their offensive line is still struggling. And despite spending the most money of any team this offseason to construct a stellar roster, they're 1-3. First-year head coach Brian Callahan cleared up any chatter about a potential quarterback controversy after Mason Rudolph stepped in for an injured Will Levis and seemed to run Callahan's offense effectively against Miami. Callahan says it's Levis's job. But a coach in their division shared, quote, it's only a matter of time before Mason Rudolph takes over, end quote. Callahan may be facing his first hard decision as a head coach before we even get to Halloween. So I know, as we talked about last week, that Brian Callahan has put his full-throated support behind Will Levis as starting quarterback. But especially if things don't go well this weekend against Indianapolis, you have to wonder if the powers that be may decide that Mason Rudolph might be the better choice for this team to win.
Don't we think the number one story of this game as it unfolds this week is you have two teams with sort of the same situation where you've got a veteran sitting there who has been through the battles, that understands the game on a deeper level just because they've been around longer. They have more wisdom. They have more experience. And right now, today, that guy might give them a better chance than the quarterback they want to take the reins long term. It's a very similar situation, although, as you said, D-Mace, when you invest a high first-round pick in a player like the Colts invested with Richardson, it is different than investing a second-round pick.
Exactly. Richardson was a top-five pick. So your investment is greater, and it can go a long way. So you wanting to, you know, keep that window open for him is understandable. But outside of that, if you're drafting a, you know, quarterback in another round, the investment isn't that great. Yes, you do want a reward on it, but it's not like you've invested a first round pick and all this money and you got to make it work. Again, I believe, you know, Callahan when he says Will Levis is my quarterback. But as he knows, and everybody in that building knows, and I'm talking about upper management, that he's your quarterback until that locker room tells you he's not your quarterback. Because, again, the thing you don't want to do is to continue trotting him out there when he's not doing anything to help you win, and you're asking everybody else to pick up their play. And everybody else is going to be looking around like we're doing our job. The only guy that's holding us back is a quarterback. You have a responsibility to the players in the locker room that Listen, if this is indeed the owner's choice, then you got to go up to the owner and say, listen, we are in the midst of losing our locker room. I know you want this guy to play. I get it. But he's not catching on to what we want him to hold on to, the playbook. He's not doing the things that we're asking him to do, and that's to read defenses and not make those crucial mistakes. So either I can leave him in here and you can lose your locker room, or I can make the switch and we can give the guys something to look forward to. Because if you trot Mason Rudolph out there one more game and Mason Rudolph does well, and then you trot Will Levis back out there and Will Levis is making the same mistake, I guarantee you on everything that I have that if they don't make the change, you're going to lose the locker room. You're going to start hearing things come out of that locker room that is not flattering to the organization. They are going to be mad, upset. Why? Because you're sacrificing them for the quarterback.
One note to pass along as it relates to Vanderbilt's win against Alabama. The Southeastern Conference has fined Vanderbilt and Arkansas after their fans stormed the field following upset wins on Saturday. Arkansas was fined $250,000 after its 19-14 win over then number 4 Tennessee because it is a second offense. Future offenses will cost the school $500,000. It was Arkansas's first home win over a top 5 opponent since beating number 3 Tennessee in 1999. Vanderbilt, a first-time offender, was fined $100,000 after its 40-35 win over then number 1 Alabama. Both instances violated the league's access to competition area policy, which states that, quote, institutions shall limit access to competition areas to participating student athletes, coaches, officials, support personnel, and properly credentialed or authorized individuals at all times. Here's the kicker. The fines are paid to the opposing school. So Vanderbilt will cut a $100,000 check to Alabama. I am hoping in the subject line it's just a little smiley face or a little winky face.
Okay. So I tear down my own goalpost.
Yes.
And I walk it up West End.
Yep.
Alabama's already gone. They're home now. Alabama's already gone. So I dump it into my river.
Yes.
But I got to pay Alabama $100,000. How idiotic does that sound? I can see if they tore down Alabama's goalpost. Yeah. Then, yeah, pay Alabama the money because they got to put another one. How idiotic is that?
Arkansas is paying $250,000 to Tennessee.
Exactly. That makes no damn sense. That's why I said, like, listen.
It's supposed to be a deterrent.
Exactly.
There's no way they weren't doing that.
Does that make sense to you that if I tear my own stuff, like if you go into my house, Willie, and I break my stove, and because you were there eating food with me, I bill you or I give you the money. What damn sense does that make?
All I
it's
know
a cleaning
is,
fee, guys.
Huh?
It's a cleaning fee.
Cleaning people, I guess.
I have not.
It makes no sense.
I've not spent much time on this, but I do remember the last time that Vanderbilt tore down the goalpost. Do you guys know this?
When was it?
1998. Vanderbilt finished 2-9.
And they tore down the goalpost?
They tore down the goalpost because, and I don't know the exact number of losses they had had, but they had lost something like 20-some-odd straight league games. And this was during the time that I was the sideline reporter for part of that, the Woody Ball era there. But they went in the conference in 95, 1-7, 0-8, 0-8, and then 1-7. The one win being against, I think his name was Brad Scott, who was the coach at South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And it was the death knell for him because they fired him and hired Lou Holtz to come in and fix the program, which he did. He did a very nice job at South Carolina. But they beat South Carolina, who was just happened to be worse than Vanderbilt was, and they tore the goalpost down.
Oh wow!
To celebrate a 2-9 season, 1-7 in the SEC.
Okay. If you do that, then you deserve to pay the other team. Okay, if you
now,
tear down the goalpost,
would be the
I can understand that.
Is it a safety thing where it's like Vanderbilt students theoretically put Alabama personnel in danger by storming the field?
Yeah. I guess it may be that.
Therefore, it's you're paying restitution to Alabama for that purpose.
But if nobody got hurt, that is the most idiotic thing that I've ever heard of. That if my students storm my field and tear down a goalpost, that I then got to pay Alabama $100,000. If nobody got hurt in the process, Alabama was able to go to their locker room, no incidents, then just you know, pay for a new goalpost. Why do you have to then pay a fine that they're going to take and give to Alabama? That makes no damn sense.
Maybe it's the process of having to cut a check to a rival. Maybe.
So a caller wanted me to clarify something.
Okay.
So this is for Willie. So they didn't tear down the goalpost in 98 after they beat South Carolina because the Titans played the next day.
They did.
Yeah,
that's so right.
They,
I remember
so
doing the show.
So a week later, when they beat Duke, that's when they tear down the goalpost.
Oh, they did it when they played Duke?
Yes.
When was that? The following week?
I think that was the next week, yeah.
This is the moment, God.
Well, they should have got fined because they were two and whatever, and they tearing down the goalpost.
You know, it's funny. I do remember being at Rio Bravo, which is no more, which was a great hangout at the time. We were doing our radio show before the Tennessee Oilers games, which were being played at Vanderbilt that year. And Jared is saying it happened in the Bobby Johnson era. I don't remember that. I would feel like I remember that. A tearing down of the goalpost during a Bobby Johnson. I just,
well, hell, they
I don't
might have, Willie. I don't know.
All I'm saying is that Vanderbilt can write the check to the University of Alabama, $100,000, and then the subject line say, na-na-na-na-na-na,
when that check gets to Alabama, what do you think the reaction will be? Like,
they're going to deposit that damn check. That's what they're going to do.
I'll take someone's money if they're giving it away.
They're going to give it to Williams. They're going to say, hey, thank you for that check. Hey, Williams, here you go. Here's $100,000 NIL.
Yeah, there's there your NIL.
It'd kind of be fun to be the Vanderbilt representative walking in. I walk in with the check. Hey, excuse me, can you take me to the football office? I want to present this check. From Vanderbilt University, we tore the goalpost down. You might have realized when we beat you. Here.
But I would, you know what? I would get checks printed out just for this incident. This I get checks put with the background is the score of the Alabama game.
One of those then, big novelty checks.
Yeah, exactly. And then
I'll publisher's
sign it,
clearing
it
over, like blown up, like huge.
Yes. One of those
big
novelty
piece of cardboard.
Checks.
Yo, that'd be
oh,
awesome.
Man. Stillman and Company coming up next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Be love on your people. Have a wonderful and blessed Monday. Peace.